Hello, 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 and welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast, a conversation about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo and, you know, whatever else that we happen to talk about. I am Reggie Darden, and the guest I have today with me is Carlos Alvarez, and we're just going to kind of jump right in and get to talking some Kenpo. I will kind of just start off with just giving a little brief background of my history here. So I started in Kenpo in the mid-90s, kind of early mid-90s. I started in at a school that was essentially a Tracy's Kenpo school, but, you know, we didn't kind of officially call it that, but that was the curriculum. I was there for about 3 years, got about halfway through my green belt, and then I left for the Army. While I was in the Army, I did a little bit of Taekwondo, a little bit of Hapkido, and a little bit of boxing. And once I, you know, got out of the military, I still wanted to train. Let me go back a little bit again. I'm from San Diego, and so that's where I trained. But when I got out of the Army, I moved to Texas and couldn't really find a school that I liked. So I just kind of did my own thing a little bit. Then I discovered my other core system, other martial arts love, and that is capoeira. So I got involved in that. I actually found the capoeira school about a week before I moved to Reno. So when I moved to Reno, it was fresh in my mind, and I got involved with someone that was teaching out there. And so I've been doing capoeira coming up on 17 years now. So that's been, you know, big part of my journey. About 2 or 3 years ago, I decided that I wanted to get back into Kenpo and started, you know, I was now living back in Texas. So I started looking around and found a school that I'm currently training at now. And that's I'm still not really sure the best way to clarify it, I guess, you know, just EPAC, you know, Ed Parker American Kenpo version. And so I've been doing that for a few years now. Just recently earned my green belt there, so that makes it nice and easy. I can just say, oh, I'm a green belt in Kenpo versus I was a green belt in this version of Kenpo, and now I'm a, you know. So it makes it real easy, but so yeah, I'm just working on that, enjoying that journey. I've got my eyes on a few other systems, but you know, Kenpo and capoeira are my core systems at this point. So so Mr. Alvarez, go ahead and fill us in on how Kenpo found you and how your journey started, and just kind of let us know your background.
Definitely, Reggie. And thank you so much for the opportunity for having me here with you. It really is a pleasure, and it's really nice meeting you. And also thank you for sharing with me and your audience your background in the martial arts. So I'm originally from Cuba. That's where you hear this accent from. I came to the United States at the age of 12. Martial arts, when it comes to Kenpo, I started Kenpo back in the early 2000s. But martial arts goes back to when I was 10 years old back in Cuba. To make a story short, your typical story with that kid in school that is very timid and is getting bullied by other kids, not allowed, you know, self-esteem, you know, just a very, very shy type of child and just dealing with this situation in school every day. One day, I was crying about the situation on my way home from school. And a neighbor saw me and he stopped me and just asked me what was going on. And I kind of explained to him a little bit. So to make a story short, the very next day he showed up at the school and he waited for me at the corner. So when I left, he asked me to follow him home. And my parents already knew that he was going to pick me up. So I went to his house and his mom cooked a small snack for us to eat. And then he made sure I opened my backpack and did my homework. When everything was done, he said, come with me to the backyard. And there was a little white gi waiting for me on top of a table. So we put on that gi and we started training. Till one day, 2 years, fast forward 2 years, my mom told me, I went home, dropped off my backpack and ran to the neighbor's house to go train. He had become like a second dad to me. He was just an amazing man. And my mom told me, hold off a second. We're leaving on Monday. And I thought, oh, where are we going? The zoo, or the beach, amusement park. Where are we going, mom? She goes, we're going to the United States with your grandma. So I don't think she finished her sentence when I turn around and run away to my neighbor's, knock on his door. And here I am, not knowing what to say to him. I'm crying. And I explained to him what the situation was. And he said one very important thing to me. He said, don't ever forget what I taught you. Continue doing what you're doing in the martial arts. And what I did for you, make sure you do it one day for someone also. As a 12-year-old kid, that didn't quite register too much, but I do remember his words. Came to the United States. We couldn't afford martial arts. So I started practicing everything he had taught me on my own. Just air karate by myself, just doing this on my own. Running around the block, trying to stay in shape and remembering all his lessons. Till one day, I saw an ad in the newspaper for the DARE program that came out back in the 80s. And there was a free boxing lessons offered at the local police department for kids just to get them off of the streets and all that stuff. So I thought, hey, it's free. Let me try it. So I went in there and I started trying these boxing classes. And that went on for another 2 years. And then the program ran out of money. So the system pretty much shut down and the coach offered some of us to go train at his house. Took about an hour to bike ride to his house and an hour back home, which I did that for about 6 months. And then, you know, it wasn't something so formal for him. So sometimes he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he was late. Sometimes he had to work. So that died pretty much. So here I am again, you know, on my own. Then I got myself a part-time job working for Wells Fargo. My grandma set that up for me. So I would sit there at Wells Fargo, look for bad checks. It was the most boring job in the world, Reggie. I would, back then, we didn't have the technology we have nowadays. Everything was paper. So I had to go paper by paper, go to this IBM computer that was with yellow letters and this big mm-hmm. screen. And I have to go there and try to put this car and match the signature and find out what was true and not true and put the bad ones on the side and the good. It was a nightmare, but it gave me my first paycheck to pay for my first martial arts lessons. And I found this martial arts school in the city where I lived. It's called Eagle Rock. And there was a martial arts dojo there by the name of Okinawan Tech Karate. So I walked in there. I met this gentleman and I said, I want to train. He said, okay, it will be $75 a month. And he had a glass on his desk and you would put the $75 there every first of the month and you train. So I did that. I put my $75 there and I started training. I remember my first paycheck was $90. So I thought, hey, I got enough. $75, I got enough. And I'll save some more just in case they cut my hours. I'll save that so I can keep paying for those lessons. So I started training with him. His name was Gordon Dobersola. So I trained with him for about 10 years. I never got my black belt with him. This gentleman, for what I understand, Mr. Dobersola only gave out about 4 or 5 black belts through his entire martial arts teaching career. He's one of those very old school teachers out there. It's my understanding that he came to the United States back during the same time that Mr. Parker did. He was also from Hawaii. And he created his own system, the Okinawa Test System. He passed away, and here I am again without an instructor. I didn't know what to do at the time. There was a lot of MMA schools that were opening in the area, a lot of jiu-jitsu schools that were opening in the area too. But I wanted to continue that path. I wanted to continue that martial arts. And here I am on the internet, you know, looking for martial arts and in YouTube and this and that. And I came across this thing called American Kenpo Karate. So I looked it up and I saw these guys there doing these fascinating self-defense techniques. And I looked at their names and Googled their name. And one of them was Grandmaster Larry Tatum. So I thought to myself, he probably lives really far away, or he's probably dead, you know? So little do I know, he lives in this, his dojo was in this city by the name of Pasadena, which is only 10, 15 minutes away from my house. So yeah, it was perfect. I remember it was like 10:30 at night and I couldn't resist. I found the art so fascinating, the way he was moving, the speed, the power, everything. So I called the number of the dojo at 10:30 at night and I left a message. Next day he called me back and he asked me to come over and meet with him at 5:30 in the afternoon, which I did. I was there a little early, showed up, and he was teaching a private lesson. And I got to see what I saw on the internet right in front of my eyes. Then he invited me to his office and he said, do you have any questions? And I said, where do I sign up? And from there, I started training with Mr. Tatum for many, many years. Like I said, I started, you know, in the early 2000s with him. And fast forward that, Reggie, I got my first, second, and third degree black belt under Mr. Tatum. He moved to Arizona, and there was three of his black belts that he left the key of his dojo to, and I was one of them. So I started, before that, I was also helping to run his dojo as well. So I was already helping him with some of his private lessons. I was taking private lessons with him early in the mornings and then come in the afternoons and nights and teach classes. And I had my own private students that he had assigned to me. So I've been doing this already for a few years. And then upon his departure from the dojo, I was one of those teachers that he trusted with the studio. And he said, it's yours. It's for you guys to run. You own it now. And he just, you know, he left. And he just wanted to do more of his seminars. That's what he wanted to, you know, be more involved with. And then shortly after that, Reggie, you know, we got hit with COVID. And that was a major issue for a lot of the martial arts dojos. And so I left because it was too much of an overhead, too many chefs in the kitchen. There was three of us. So I figured it's better to keep friends than make enemies. So I decided to remove myself from the dojo. And I said to myself, well, what do I do now with my martial arts? And I known this gentleman by the name of Mr. Mark Arnott for a while now. He's another amazing, amazing martial artist. He runs a beautiful dojo in Eagle Rock, California. So I thought, you know, he's right in my city. This is COVID time. Let me reach out to him. Let me see if there's anything we can do to help. So I talked to him and I started, you know, helping him teach. We started doing the Zoom things. And, you know, before everything started, it was where you could go in the dojo and kind of teach. And there was the social distancing. They hadn't talked about masks yet. It's wash your hands type of thing. So we take videos washing our hands. And then the mask came over and then the social distancing again. And then nobody at the dojo. So now we're doing Zoom from far away. Once the restrictions got lifted, I came back to the studio. I remember we would train on the parking lot because we could train, but we couldn't have people indoors. And it was just a big old, you know, trying to understand this COVID scenario was a nightmare. Then eventually we had some people in the dojo. So we were teaching people outside, people inside, too. Eventually we got everybody inside and, you know, we kept teaching. So I became his right-hand man. So here I am teaching with Mr. Arnott and running some of the classes and working side by side with him. But the most beautiful thing about that, Reggie, is that I found a very good friend. I found someone with a great heart. I remember leaving my house in the mornings on my way to my office, and I would stop by and say hi to him and then go home. I mean, go to work. And then after work, I would leave my gi on purpose at home so I could go home and say hi to my wife and my kids. But I would stop by the dojo and have a conversation with him and talk with him for a little bit. and then go home, get my gi, say hi to the family, and then come and teach his dojo. And then after class, we would close the door and just sit down and talk. And most of the time, we just talked about life. It wasn't even martial arts. It was just talking about life. And I got to know him very well. He got to know me very well. And I learned so much from him. Now I learned how to be kind through martial arts because his heart is just amazing. So he taught me without realizing he was teaching me how to be different, how to be kinder, how to identify myself with martial arts in a different way, in a different level. So that right there was that aspect. That's my martial arts journey right there. But there is one more thing that I would like to share with you. Remember that teacher in Cuba that took me mm-hmm. and started teaching me for 2 years and told me not to quit, to continue and do what he did for me one day. I didn't realize that there were kids. I never liked working with kids, I'll be honest with you. I really didn't like it. I have to really be very creative to be able to hold their attention span and not get the kids to be bored in class. And it's just different how you teach kids and adults. So I have to work so hard to get these kids' attention. And I thought sometimes, maybe I was being a little too hard. Maybe I was being a little too mean. But these kids would come over and hug me. And the parents were so happy with me. And then I realized through some stories that we can talk about later on that I started helping kids that I didn't know that needed my help, like I did when I was a little child in Cuba. And that's when I realized that I was doing, not even thinking about it, I was doing what he asked me to do, to help others just the same way he did. So I took it up to myself to find them again. So I started doing this search for my teacher for many years. You know, the communication between the United States and Cuba is basically impossible. I didn't have any more family over there or friends that I could communicate with. I just knew his address. I had remembered it. I knew where he lived. So I figured the best way to get a hold of him, Reggie, was to contact the Cuban community in Florida, Miami. That's where they're all at. So I opened up the Yellow Pages. This is a phone book for those of you young people out there. It's a phone book that you open and you can go to a specific state, city, and you get all these numbers that are listed in this phone book. I started calling everybody in that phone book. My phone bill was about $500 by the end of the month. Wow. It was crazy, but I never found them. And I had some interesting stories from these phone calls. There were some people that thought I was like somebody's child that was looking for their dad. And I think there are some families that tell them I'd be having issues right now, but that was not my intent. So then there was this thing called MySpace before Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
You can see how old I am here. So I went to MySpace and no luck. Then Facebook came around. I joined all these Facebook groups from Cuba. No luck. And then one day I get a message. And it's this lady saying, are you Carlos Alvarez that lived in this house? And these are your parents? And I said, how interesting. So I replied back and I go, yes, this is who I am. And she goes, well, I was your neighbor. My mom used to cook for you and she used to take care of you at times. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So we started talking. And then I said, do you know Angel? That was his name, Angel. You know Angel, the martial arts instructor? And she goes, yes, I know who he is. I go, is he still around? He goes, yes, he's still around. And he's still teaching. At the time, he was, back when he started teaching, he was the captain of the national karate team in Cuba. So I asked her, I would love to talk to him. And she said, well, he's at work right now. But when he comes home, I'll go over there and let him know you want to talk to him. So I was just blown away. So here I am at the dojo teaching at my school. And my phone rings and it's a weird different sound because it's somebody calling me from Facebook. So I saw her name come up and I had already finished teaching class here at my dojo. And I picked up the call and it was a FaceTime call. And I see him. He's right there on the screen. And he's gotten much older and he's got white hair now. And he's seen me and he couldn't believe it was me. I couldn't believe it was him. He started crying. We tried to be tough martial artists here, but I broke down too. And tears came out. Don't say that to anybody. It's a big secret, you guys. All right. No tears here.
Just us.
Yeah, that's right. So, and I turned the phone around and I showed him around and I said, look what I did and everything that I did, every day that I did it, every technique that I learned, every step that I learned, I always thought of you and I always hope you were proud of me. And he said, well, I haven't stopped thinking of you since the day you left. And I always wondered what happened to you. And I always hoped that you continue training. So I said, I kept your promise. He says, you sure did. And now we're in contact. We talk once in a while through Facebook. So that's my story, Reggie, in a nutshell. Oh, and when I moved to Texas, I'm from California too, as you know, from Pasadena, Eagle Rock, all that. I moved to Texas because of work. So I'm here in Dallas in the Plano area. I decided to open up the dojo because I love what I do and I love to share what I do and I love to help. And again, you know, in respect to my teachers, I continue teaching what every single teacher in my life had taught me. And here I am.
Excellent. Excellent. Just kind of going back to that first teacher there, what style was that?
Shotokan Karate.
Shotokan. Okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Just kind of a few things that came up as you were speaking. Mike Kern instructor, I believe he got his third and fourth degree from Larry Tatum. So we are
very nice.
We are like in that aspect. Still working on getting actually both of them on as guest in the future.
Very nice.
I really want to get my instructor on because he did tell us of a time where I guess he was at one of Larry Tatum's seminars and Mr. Tatum hit him with a palm strike and was like the hardest he'd ever been hit. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely want to get that story out there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All of us that have worked with Mr. Tatum, we have stories like that. I mean, I was with him for many, many years and I became one of his ukes, his dummies, right? What we call it in the Kempo mm-hmm. system. And I remember the first time I was a purple belt. The first time I got hit by him, and I remember I thought to myself, what just happened? And then I looked at him and said, can you do it again? And this time I kept my eyes open and because I wanted to see what happened. So from that point forward, every time, every morning, we made twice in the morning for private lessons for 30 minutes. And he, especially when he was getting ready for those seminars, man, I would get hit in so many places. And I always kept my eyes open because I wanted to see how he did it. So it's an amazing experience, you know. It really is. So I hope you can get him in your show soon.
Yeah. Since you trained so long with him, are you on any of his videos?
No, I'm actually. Well, no, I'm not in his videos. Do I have it here? I don't have it here in my dojo right now. But I'm actually one of his books with a picture. He wrote a book, and he has. They came to the studio to take some pictures of him, doing techniques. And I was one of the guys that he actually did those techniques on. And the artist was there taking pictures and doing the drawings. So I'm actually in the drawings of his one of his books.
Oh, okay. Right on. I like it. And then the other thing that kind of came to mind, so Mr. Arnott, as of our recording right now, it's not released yet, but I did speak with him recently, so that will be a upcoming episode. And yeah, he was a delight to speak with. And
yes,
that's a good company to keep there. So very, very nice.
Yeah, he is. He's an amazing man. He always, one thing about Mr. Arna, besides having an amazing heart, and I have so many stories about Mr. Arnott that I can share with you that are very heartwarming. But out of respect for him, I won't share those stories because I don't have, you know, he's just one of those guys that he does things for people, but he doesn't say anything about it. He does it. And I don't want to be the guy that says these things. I don't know if that makes any sense. I would share that in a private setting, but not something open like this.
Gotcha.
But he's just got an amazing heart and an open mind to things. I remember, so I have been working in jiu-jitsu for a while, and I came up to him one day and I said, Mr. Arnott, what if we start teaching? Because, you know, like Mr. Parker said, the art has to evolve. Why don't we start trying to teach some of the groundwork? Not for us to become jiu-jitsu practitioners, but to understand how the ground works and get back on our feet and do what we do as Kempoists. He said, okay, how do we do that? Just right away, no questions asked. I know in the Kempo community, a lot of people, a lot of instructors might be a little, you know, iffy about those things, but he was very open-minded about it. And we started doing the groundwork, and we brought an amazing martial arts instructor, Marcelo, came over and started teaching. We started working with Marcelo for a long time. And then that stayed in me. And, you know, when I opened my dojo here too, I wanted to continue doing that. The problem was, Reggie, that, you know, I teach the Ed Parker curriculum, the 24 techniques, the same way it was taught to Mr. Tato when Mr. Tato taught it to me. But it was hard for me to implement the groundwork when it came to testing, when it came to make it part of the curriculum. I didn't want to break the rhythm, the whole thing. So I have been looking for a long time at Kempo 5.0. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Kempo 5.0.
But
Mr. Speakman has addressed that question that I always had. How do we put this together in the syllabus, in the curriculum? So I now teach both. I teach, got him to talk to Mr. Speakman for quite some time now. He's an amazing man. Also, I've been very lucky coming across these amazing martial artists in my life, just amazing people. He's just an amazing human being also. He has a vision of what Mr. Parker wanted. And after talking to him for a while, I said, you know, let me look at the curriculum. Let me see what you got. And when I looked at his curriculum with my background and my experience and everything that I had been doing through my life, I thought, wow, this man put it together. He put together what me, with all respect, what I wanted to see. So we made the switch over. Now I have also Kempo 5.0 here at my dojo. I teach both, but I got the Kempo 5.0 here at my dojo. And my students are the way these guys have grown now when it comes to fighting and when it comes to understanding the groundwork and the stand-up work has been tremendous. So,
very nice. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I've actually been quite curious about the Kempo 5.0, and you know, I had did a little bit of looking into the online programs, but I was like, you know, I want the in-person experience. So we're not too far from each other. So I will definitely have to come visit. And
you're more than welcome. You have a home here. You know, anytime my doors are always open to you, any of your listeners, any of your friends that want to come and visit. We're all a big family, Reggie. And we're all trying to achieve the same goal. You know, we're all climbing that mountain together to get to the top of the mountain. We just take different routes, but we all want to achieve the same thing. So my doors are open to you, to your friends, to your viewers, anyone that wants to come and visit here in Plano.
Exactly. Thank you. So going, you know, your first instructor, you know, mentioned about, you know, sharing the art and sharing the training. So from that point, did you always want to teach, or was that something that just kind of as going along, you kind of fell into it, or was that there always a desire to teach?
Great question. No, I think I fell right into the world of teaching by accident. I was a very selfish martial artist. I just wanted to do this for myself. Just learn and keep it to myself and not teach it to anybody. One of my instructors, Mr. Gordon de Versola, one day he wasn't feeling well. He just said, Mr. Alvarez, I need you to go teach this class. And then after you finish teaching the kids class, I need your help with the adult class. And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, what do I do here? I never taught before. So I started doing that, and my first lesson was horrible. My second lesson was horrible. I think my first month was terrible, but that's what it's all about. And he kept giving me little tips, you know, what to do. So that's how I started falling into the world of teaching. And then after he passed away and I went with Mr. Tatum, I remember one day he just looked at me. He said, Mr. Alvarez, the same thing. I'm not feeling well tonight. I'm going home. Can you teach class tonight? And I remember I used to do all the warm-ups for him before, and then he would come in and teach the classes. And I said to him, "But what am I going to teach?" He looked at me. He goes, "Look at the board. Look at how many techniques you got for each bell level. You got plenty of material. I'm going home, Mr. Alvarez." And he just walked away. And I thought, oh, my goodness. So here I am in front of all these guys that I known already. They were like family. But now they're looking at me going, "Are you teaching us?" So that's, you know, I felt I get into that world of teaching. And then my wife always told me, you know, you got to share what you know. You can't be selfish that way. You can be. Don't forget what your teacher told you. You can be selfish. And I always fought that. I always said, I want to do this for myself. And no, you can't be selfish. So one day the wall just broke and I said, hey, you know what? Stop the selfishness. Stop that already and just... And then you feel so great when you just open your heart and you let it out and you go, that's what I'm meant to do. I'm meant to help. It was never meant to keep to myself. Mr. Parker brought this to the world. He shared it with the world. My instructor shared it with me. Why am I doing something different? My instructor in Cuba told me to do this. Why am I fighting everything that they told me to do? It's not right. So... took a little bit of meditation, a little bit of thinking, and, you know, here I am, enjoying what I do for people. And when they walk to my dojo and they walk away, I always have a smile on my face. You know, I always receive them with a smile and I say goodbye with a smile. And it's a great, great feeling inside your heart every single time. So I'm glad I broke that barrier. Yeah.
I agree wholeheartedly. I haven't done much in the Kenpo teaching side as of yet. I did some, you know, in my original school, I did help out a little bit, but I didn't officially join the instructors program because I knew I was leaving. So I didn't do that. But and then I'm currently in the instructor training program for at my current school.
Nice.
But in my capoeira journey, I kind of ended up inheriting our group and our school, and
very nice.
Was kind of thrust into teaching well before I should have been. And you know, yeah, just that feeling of you know, being able to share and being able to help out, you know, help out others is, you know, there's just really, really nothing like it. And it's I really appreciate, you know, those that choose to do it, because it's not an easy road, especially if you don't have, you know, a lot of other, you know, people helping you out to do that. So I really, really commend those that take charge and get, you know, put themselves out there for that. So so that's really good. So so now, are there any other systems that you have trained in or are training in, or is it pretty much just Kenpo now?
So pretty much you know, so everything that I learned through my life since a child, I always kept with me. I actually have a lot of notebooks with a lot of notes. It's something I tell my students, always write your notes, guys. Always write your notes. If I have a minute, I'll share a quick story with you.
Oh, yeah.
Is that okay?
Of course. We got plenty of tape.
Thank you. So Mr. Gordon de Versola, back to my first instructor that I was able to pay for lessons. I remember one day he said to me, I want to teach you a form. that I haven't taught anybody. It's one of my personal forms that I really care for a lot. And I said to him, sure. You know, so we started learning this form. It had like 240 pieces. It was just this tremendously long form. It took us like 6 months to figure this out. At the same time, I'm going through my curriculum, getting ready for my testing, studying the form that is required for my test, my techniques, the sets, everything that I needed to learn. Over there, we call them WASAs, which are like very short, quick self-defense techniques that some of them are taken from the forms and things like that. So I'm getting ready for all this. And at the same time, learning this form that he's teaching me that is very complex, you know, 240 some parts to it. So I learned it. And then I continued getting ready for my test. I took my test. I was testing for my brown. And then one day, there was a group of visitors that came over to visit from another school. And he called me to the front. He asked me to do that form. And I got there and I did the first part and I completely blanked out. Forgot how it started, forgot how it ended, forgot the in-between, forgot everything. And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, all right, right now the brain is just like, you know, it's out the door. He looked at me, he goes, Mr. Alvarez, meditate. So I went into my Okinawa meditation stance. He goes, begin. I did the first part again, pow, locked. He looked at me and he said, sit down. And Reggie, I'm telling you, it was probably from where I was standing, it was probably about 10 feet that I had to walk to where I needed to sit down. And it felt like 10 miles. It felt like I had to walk forever. And I felt like everybody was looking at me. It was so embarrassing that when the class finished, I went into the restroom to change. But I stayed there forever until I couldn't hear a noise, meaning that everybody left because I didn't want to see anybody. I was so embarrassed. I walked out and he was sitting at his desk and I got in front of him and I said, Shihan. He looked at me with a firm voice. He said, go home, Mr. Alvarez. And I insisted. I go, Shihan. He goes, go home. Turned around and went home. That went on for about 2 weeks. Every day after class, I went up to him and he goes, go home, go home, go home. Till one day he looked at me, he goes, what do you want? And I said, I want to apologize. He goes, where are your notes? I go, what notes? The notes about the form that I taught you. Where are they? I go, I don't have any notes. So you pretty much threw away in the trash what I gave you. I will never, ever teach you that form ever again. He goes, for now on, take your notes. Because if you wouldn't have your notes there, at least you could have gotten back and relearned it yourself. So I learned a valuable lesson that day. So from that point on, I always brought a notebook and I remember either at the dojo or in my car before I went home, I would write my notes. I always kept a notebook by my nightstand because sometimes at night stuff would come up to my head and I would just write them down. So I have collected many notebooks throughout the years because of that story, because I always felt so terrible, terrible about that. And Mr. De Versola got really sick and he ended up in the hospital and he wasn't able to communicate anymore. He could only open his eyes and close his eyes. And I remember that he loved Coke. He loved a nice pop, you know, Coke and soda pop. And I went to visit him at the hospital and they would only give him ice chips only. That was the only thing that they would give him, plus the IV and the whole thing, you know. And I thought to myself, I got to get him his Coke. I went against the nurses. I went to the vending machine. I got myself a Coke. I know people are hearing me there probably going, how dare you? But hey, he was happy, guys. So I went to the vending machine. I got a Coke, soda pop. I put it inside my jacket. I got a straw, one of those straws that looks like an accordion that you can, you know, maneuver back and forth. I went inside the room to see him. I remember the nurses were far away through the windows and all that. And I'm in my jacket trying to open this, you know, the pop so they wouldn't hear the pop. And you know, and I got it there a little bit and I put the straw and I put it there and he's drinking and he's smiling and he's having a great time and he's drinking slowly and I'm taking it away from him. And then I held his hand and I said, Shihan, I just wanted to say again, I'm sorry for that day that I forgot your form. I am so sorry that that happened. I want you to know that I regret this tremendously and I would like you to please forgive me. Because he had never forgiven me. He had said, it's over. It's done. And as I'm holding his hand, he squeezed my hand and he smiled and he blinked his eyes. And tears came down his eyes. And to me, that was him forgiving me. And, you know, he went away from us. He left us. And but there was peace in my heart. I was able to talk to him before he left us and fix that with him. So I always tell my students that story, not for them to feel sad or sorry, but for them to learn the value of taking your notes, what your instructors are telling you, treasure that. Because we're here to help you guys with everything we can. And we're trying to give you this information, but write this information down. It's going to help you a lot in the long run, because we're not going to be here forever. You know, so I have all these notes, and hopefully one day I can pass it to my kids. I got some. I'm always taking notes. I got notes. I mean, it hasn't stopped. I'm always taking notes all the time. I mean, I got a book next to my nightstand. Sometimes things come to my mind in the middle of the night, and I just write them down. And that's what I tell my students to do. So there you go.
Yeah, no, that's huge. I like that. I'm you know, guilty of not taking notes, and I really, really, really should. So, yeah, that story definitely helps inspire to do that. So,
thank you.
I will definitely kind of work on that. it also kind of gave me a laugh. So, you know, I guess it's been about 3, maybe 4 weeks since my test, and finally, I was going through the tests, and I'm going through coordination set 2. I get about halfway through coordination set, and then I stop and I realize, oh wait, they asked me to do blocking set 2. So it's like, So yeah, my instructor was like, yeah, we were wondering how long it was going to take for you to figure it out. So we asked for blocking set 2, so yeah,
that's great.
I just had one of those, and then I totally forgot a whole section of freestyle. Good old B5. I just couldn't remember. I don't know what happened, but I was just like, this is not going well. And then what else?
Well, in all fairness to you, Reggie, they get a little bit complex and long after at the blue level, the blue car level, you know?
Yeah.
And
for some reason, I always get 5 and 6 mixed up. Mm-hmm. Or I always kind of swap places with them. So yeah, I definitely gotta work on that. But yeah, when I get on my test and you know, I start forgetting something, then I start spiraling, and I have to try and convince myself to, hey, like, calm down. Like,
yeah,
you know this stuff, just relax. But you know, you get nervous and excited and all of those, and then things just start flying out the window, and you start doubting. That's I would say a big problem that I have is just I doubt myself. It's like, I know these things. I've you know, trained them, I've worked them and stuff. But once I have that little moment of like, oh wait, do I really know this answer?
Well, it's part of the process.
Part of my work. Yeah.
It's part of the process. It's part of the growth. It's part of the, you know, the journey, you know?
Exactly.
And the fact that you care about it and you're conscious of it, that means you fix it, you know? So that's great. Yeah. And congratulations on your test, by the way.
Yeah. Thanks. You have your moments, and then, you know, then you kind of pull it back together. And so I usually have trouble. I always seem to have more trouble on my stripe test than I do the full belt test. Not quite sure why that is, but you know, it's all part of it. So just need to work harder and work smarter and take those notes. So
like I tell my students too. So when my students get ready for testing, they're always pre-testing. There's always a lot of pre-testing. I always want to make sure they pre-test a lot. So when I give them the green light to go, they already pre-tested with me. I feel confident that, you know, they know the material, they're ready to go. So that's when they get the green light. But the day of the test, they're very nervous. Mm-hmm. They're not nervous during the pretest. They're nervous on the day of the test. You know, this is the day. This is really happening now. Eyes are on you. You have to not perform this. But my theory on that is that a lot of the students are nervous because they care. So when you care about something so deeply, you know, you're going to be concerned. You're going to be a little worried. And that sometimes can play a number in your mind. But the fact that you care and you also adhere to, you want to please the instructor. You want to please your friends, your martial arts brothers and sisters that are there with you. Because we all care about each other. And that shows a lot from that individual. The fact that you care and you want to please these people shows the kind of heart that you have in what martial arts is developing and doing for you as a human, as an individual. So able to be nervous during a test, you know, it's part of it because you care. You know, if you're not nervous and you go there, yeah, whatever, you know, it's, you know, that's not what it should be. There's a problem if that happens. You go there and you're like, whatever, I'm just going to do this. No big deal. I'm not nervous, blah, blah. You know, there's a problem. You know, we have to analyze it a little bit. There might be a problem there somewhere.
Exactly. All right. Got a few little kind of fun little questions as we kind of head towards a close for our time. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
No, I don't. I don't have a favorite technique. I don't. I think the entire system, the entire flow of the system, the entire study of the system is perfect, is amazing. So it's like pretty much saying, do you have a favorite son? I got three boys. Asking me that question, it'd be like, I don't. I love all my kids the same. I love the curriculum inside out. I have no favorite.
Gotcha. I like it. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
Same thing. I got to say no. See, there are days that I come in and I'm like, you know what? I feel like doing form A, knife set. I got the knives right here next to me. That's what I've been working on this week. They're right here.
Oh, very nice.
So I'm like, okay, that's my week where I just identifying with that form for some reason, you know? And then there are days that I come in and I'm like, I'm identifying with short form one. And I do short form one for an entire week and I find things and I like going to my yellow curriculum and find things in short form one that are applying. And I find short form one in all my 10 techniques. Where is short form one? Here it is. So, it depends on the mood. It's like the favorite of the month. Is it chocolate? Is it vanilla? is it pumpkin spice? What is it? So it just, that's how it goes with me with forms and sets.
I like it. If there was anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
I would like to visit Cuba and not say anything to my instructor that I'm there. And I would like to knock on his door and say, I'm here for my lesson. Can we have a snack? Can we look over my homework? And can we go to the backyard? That would be my dream.
I like that. All right. And then our final question, and this one is the hardest. In honor of Ed Parker's love for humor and jokes, do you have a joke to share with us?
Well, I'm the worst guy when it comes to jokes, and I always ruin the punchline. You got me there, Reggie. Do I have a joke for you? Like I said, I'm the worst when it comes to jokes. My students will tell you that I will say a joke and I go, wait a minute, that wasn't it. Hold on a second. So I don't. I like to be spontaneous and I like to, you know, have my classes. I like to make them fun and I'll say jokes here and there during class. Like sometimes, and please, guys, all political people up there, I'm not trying to put politics in here, but the other day I was trying to remember something and I couldn't remember it for a second. I'm looking at my students, I go, and I looked and I go, anybody got an ice cream cone? You guys go figure that out. So, I mean, just the way it is. So I don't really, I'm terrible at jokes. I just go with it.
No, that's perfect. I like that. I've been kind of going back and forth as to whether or not to keep that as one of the questions. But
I think it's great. You put me on my toes.
I'm actually enjoying the you know, the quote unquote non-answer answers a lot better than you know getting a joke, but actually did have heard some good ones. So
I'm sure,
you know, it's
kind of
50-50 as to, you know, how that's going to get answered. So
I'm sorry that I failed on that right there. I'm sorry.
No,
but
you did perfect. give you a perfect score for that.
Thank you, Reggie. Thank you. Well, let me ask you a question. Can you answer that question yourself? Can you can you go back and answer all those questions yourself? If you don't mind.
Yeah, you're the first one. Now I'm on the spot.
let's start with your favorite technique. Your favorite technique.
Techniques. Going from my original training, I guess I should first answer with what I call the Kenpo All-Stars, the ones you're going to expect to hear, you know, your five swords, your thundering hammers, your flashing wings, I call those the Kenpo All-Stars because at my first school, you know, we had those, even though, you know, it was kind of the Tracy curriculum. We, you know, those techniques, you know, you see five swords and it doesn't matter what version of Kenpo it is, you know, there's going to be five swords. There's going to be thundering hammers, you know.
Yes.
So, of course, I like the All-Star techniques. Kind of dating myself, and I've brought this up with a few other guests, but my buddy and I, we used to look at the Panther videos, Panther production videos back in the day, and I was really intrigued by there was one by David German, and he was combining Kenpo with jiu-jitsu.
Wow.
And one of the ones that really stuck out with me was he did this variation to flashing wings where he was adding like wrist locks and arm bars to it. And that just always stuck out with me. And I always thought, you know, man, that is so cool that, you know, Kenpo is such a great base for connecting with other arts. And so that one, you know, really always stuck with me.
Nice.
One, just kind of another one that, kind of I'm thinking of, in the Tracy version, it's called, Windmill Guard. It's probably very similar to attacking mace.
Okay.
Techniques kind of, that can kind of fall under that kind of, I don't know, guys, grouping, techniques like that. I really like, I will probably say that I'm sure when I listen to this later, I'm gonna be like, oh, why didn't I mention this technique? those ones, stand out.
Good.
As far as forms, I'm going to have to say, you know, this is not in the EPAC system, unfortunately. And I was disappointed when I started at my current school, but, two of my favorites, are book set, which they still do in the Tracy version. And I guess it's also known as Panther set and a few other ones, but, book set is definitely one of my favorites. So when I've we started at my current school, and I was like, "Ooh, like I can't wait to do." And it's like, we don't do that here. I was like, "Oh, this is like one of my favorite ones." So,
yeah.
Luckily, I got in touch with my original instructor and got some videos and whatnot, and been nice. Kind of working on doing that again. I haven't got to learn this yet because this is a higher belt form, but there's another one called Tiger and Crane. That I'm quite fond of, but I have not learned it. Another one that, you know, I like finger set just because it's kind of my go-to if I'm like standing in line or something and I need something to do, like I'll do finger set. So it's a nice distraction.
Yes.
I remember always liking long three. But I haven't refreshed. I haven't, you know, quote unquote, relearned it yet. So, you know, I'll have to kind of see if that's still, you know, because I know a lot of people mention short three as being their kind of favorite. So,
right, I heard that too. Yeah,
I feel like I liked long three more, but I don't know. We'll see. And then, of course, you know, have to mention, you know, form four, or depending on who you ask, you know, there is a long four and a short four,
right?
And so I'm eager to get my hands on those when the time comes. So those would definitely be in there. As far as who to train with, oh my God, there's so many people, but you know, of course, you know, Ed Parker, I would love to, you know, get to spend some time, learning directly from the source.
Yes.
So yeah, he would definitely be one, a fictional person, and not too many people have brought up fictional people, but so I don't know if you've watched the Cobra Kai television show.
I'm a big nerd,
but Johnny Lawrence, I would just I lost my mind when he came out with the eagle fang. I couldn't stop laughing.
Yes.
just watching that show, and I just actually rewatched the whole, you know, series, and just like, he is my spirit animal. Just the way that they kind of, you know, the writers just kind of, you know, he's like, you know, kind of stuck in the 80s. Just something about that just really kind of clicks with me, and just
the 80s are the best, Reggie. The 80s are the best. I don't care what anybody says out there. Exactly, 80s are awesome.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, you know, and not to ruffle any feathers, but you know, I enjoy kind of his not necessarily, you know, non-woke lifestyle.
Amen. I'm glad you said that. Yes, sir. That's right.
So yeah, those would definitely be on the list. There's so many others, but those definitely come to mind. And then as far as a joke, pretty much all the jokes I know are really long. So I think I'll probably save that for another time.
Okay,
another episode, or we can chat about that off air. But
definitely,
yeah, I got to start learning some short jokes.
Man, me too.
You know, these really long ones that, you know, I'd learned in like in elementary school, and I don't know. I need a new batch, but.
Great answer, sir. Thank you for answering those also. Great answers. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very, very much.
Thanks for asking. So, now is the point where you get the shameless self-promotion, and This is your point. If there's anything you want to plug or anything else that you wanted to mention, now's your chance to get that out there and then
definitely
we'll close out.
Definitely. I want to say again, thank you. Thank you so much for the space that you're giving me today, for asking me the questions you asked, for giving me the opportunity to open my heart out. So I want to thank you so much for that. I had a great time. I really enjoyed the moment. I think it was great. I'm very happy with this this time that we had together today. So thank you, Reggie. Thank you for that. And before I forget, thank you for your service too, sir. I know you were in the Army, and I want to thank you. Thank you for your service, because of people like you that were able to have this conversation, and I don't have to look over my shoulder and worry about something flying over my window. So you guys keep us safe at night, and thank you. Thank you so much for that too. That's pretty much all I got. Well,
yeah, no, thank you so much for your time. I love hearing your story, and can't wait to get this out and let everyone else enjoy. And thank you. Thank you so much again.
Thank you, sir. And have a beautiful day, and we'll be in contact. Like I said, you have a home here. So here in Plano.
I will definitely be coming to visit.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day. Take care.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.